Hi, I'm Courtney Vian, and this is the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Brandon Poe, the founder of Poe Group Advisors, and he's going to be talking about things that you need to know about before you sell your firm. Poe Group Advisors has been in business since 2003, and over that time, they've helped sell hundreds of firms of all sizes. And Brandon is also the author of the books Accountant's Flight Plan and On Your Own.
So, Brandon, as we know, many CPAs are approaching retirement and thinking about selling their firms. How can a CPA know when it's time to sell?
Well, I think that's a difficult question. I think that's perhaps something they need to think about for a long time before they really know that they're ready. We always advise people who are approaching that time to develop other interests and really be creating a vision for what life is going to look like after the sale. Now, for some people, that's easy if they have another opportunity that they're going to. But people who are facing retirement, that's a major life decision. So it usually is something they need to think about years prior.
And how do people usually feel about selling their firms?
I think for most people, letting go is difficult. It's sometimes their whole life has been spent building a practice. They're very close to the staff. They're very close to the clients. So there's quite a bit of emotional, there's a lot of emotion there. And also the fact that they're facing retirement, which can be an emotional time. So that's, I think most people, and even the people who are really ready, I had a guy tell me, we listed his practice and we found a great buyer and he got an offer. And I called him to see what he thought about the offer. And he said, wow. Really hits you between the eyes, doesn't it? And he was somebody that that I would categorize as very ready to sell, but still, when he got that offer, that definitive that this was really happening, it still hit him. So it's I think even for people who are highly motivated to sell, it's still tough.
Yeah. I can imagine that finding the right buyer might ease somebody's fears.
It does. It certainly makes it a lot easier to know that your legacy is going to carry on well. Most people are very caring about their clients and their staff, and they want to know that the fit is good so that those people will be happy and they can feel good about who's taking over the practice. So fit is probably the most important aspect of matching a buyer and a seller.
What else should CPAs be looking for in a buyer?
Well, I think the biggest thing are the soft skills. The technical skills are somewhat of a given, but even if there's some weaknesses in the technical skills, those can be strengthened fairly easily over time. Soft skills are much more difficult to, they're not likely to change. So the relationship skills, the people skills, the leadership skills, those need to be a good match for the seller who's exiting. The other thing you want to look for in a buyer is motivation. If the motivation is not strong, then that can cause a lot of doubt just in terms of it makes it hard to get a deal to the finish line if the buyer's not properly motivated.
You also mentioned that one of the most important things to look for in a buyer is their ability to provide good service. How can you suss out a buyer's capacity for good client service?
Well, I think you need to find out what their client service philosophies are. I think just having numerous conversations with a buyer is very, you can learn a lot from a couple of hours of meeting a person and asking them just about their experience. I think similar background is helpful. If the let's say an owner has a previous Big Four background, then he's probably going to want to find a buyer with a similar background, similar client service philosophy, similar. You look at size of clients. I mean, if the seller has clients that are mostly mid-market companies, 20 million and up, and he's talking to a buyer who only has client experience with much, much smaller companies, then that might be a mismatch. So background, overall philosophy, and just style, conversational style is important. If you have a meeting with a buyer and it doesn't seem like you're on the same page in terms of your communication style, then that might not work.
Sure. What are some things that might be red flags that would tell somebody they shouldn't go with a particular buyer?
Well, I'm going to paint them under the category of lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. I think the buyer needs to have confidence. So, there's some things that would indicate that the confidence isn't where it needs to be. And one thing is pace. You know, the pace of the negotiation, the pace of the buyer kind of taking the steps in sequence is a big red flag if they're not moving very quickly. If they seem over reliant on what the seller is going to do in terms of the client relationships and the staff relationships, if they feel like the whole responsibility of transitioning the firm is going to be on the seller, that's a red flag. Because it's going to take no small part of a lot of the responsibilities of transitioning fall on the buyer's shoulders. And the other couple of things are lack of capacity. If the buyer doesn't seem to have the capacity because they already have a pretty heavy client load, that's a red flag. So the other thing is, will they provide proof of funding? It's really, it's hard to negotiate in confidence if you're not sure the buyer can actually fulfill their financial obligations at closing.
So what are buyers looking for when they're looking to buy a practice?
Buyers, when you buy any business, you're basically valuing it based on the present value of the future cash flows of the business. So buyers are obviously looking for a practice that's going to provide a good living for them and a good future. So they're looking at cash flow to owner. They're looking at the quality of the clients. They're looking at the capability and longevity of the staff. They want preferably a practice that has lower owner hours. Would you rather buy a practice where the owner worked 3,000 hours or 1,000 hours? They also want to make sure that the practice has a good reputation, has good work papers and files. They want to be able to follow the work of the previous owner and have efficient systems. So those are probably the biggest things most buyers are looking for.
So what should CPAs be doing to prepare their firm for a sale?
Well, it depends on their timetable. If somebody's got 3, 5 or more years to get the practice ready, there's a lot they can do. And you want to think about it in terms of selling the practice. You want to appeal to the largest number of possible buyers. So if you got a long time frame, I would say the biggest, the first thing to look at is focusing the practice. If you've got some lines that aren't terribly common, that will reduce the number of buyers that might be interested in your practice. For example, if you've got, let's say 10% of your practice is business valuation. Well, there are a lot of buyers that aren't able to do business valuation. So that could rule out certain buyers that might be in your pool right there. So if that is not a real profitable segment, it might be worth looking at eliminating that segment from your business. The other thing you want to really evaluate is pricing. That's probably the easiest way, the single easiest way to boost your margins and really improve your practice. So I would say that's probably one of the big ones. The other thing is just buyers want what I call a hair-free practice. So you want to eliminate any problem clients, any problem employees, anything that's just unpleasant. If it's unpleasant for you as a seller, it's probably going to be unattractive to a buyer. So mm-hmm. any kind of cleanups that you can do are helpful. If you're putting your practice on the market and you don't have a lot of time to make changes, you can do some very easy things that are quick. And that's, you might want to clean up your accounts receivable list. Buyers eventually will look at that. If not initially, then during their due diligence period, they're going to look, and it doesn't look good to have a lot of late paying clients. You can do some cosmetic things to the practice. Just have it neat and clean. It needs to be organized. So I think one of the biggest things in getting your practice ready for a sale, if you've got several years to prepare, is to really focus on your billing or pricing practices. And I mean, what you're charging your clients. If your fees are too low, you probably know that already. And that can be, it just has ripples effect over the entire practice, and it will boost the cash flow of the practice and make the practice more attractive to buyers when you go to sell.
On your blog, you say that you recommend that sellers choose a cash deal as opposed to something like an earnout. What's good about a cash deal?
Well, you know, I think if you talk to anyone who wants to sell, a cash deal for a seller is going to be more attractive for a number of reasons. One of which is just the peace of mind that when they exit the practice, they're not worried about their eventual payoff. And it really helps them kind of go to that next chapter much more easily when you have a clean sale like that. So, you know, if you're a seller and the market will bear a cash deal, why wouldn't you do a cash deal? Now, we actually think that philosophically it's the right way to go as well. The main thing that determines the client retention rates is the service. Clients are service sensitive. So if you have a good buyer who's professionally qualified, is good at client service, that's really what's going to be the driving force behind people keeping clients. So a retention-based deal really puts the responsibility on the wrong party to a large degree, because you want to put the responsibility on the shoulders of the person who has the most control over the results of the practice. And an earnout deal really shifts that responsibility over to the seller, whereas a cash deal puts the onus on the buyer.
So in your experience, what are some of the biggest mistakes that sellers make when they're trying to sell their practices?
The biggest mistake is probably limiting themselves to one discussion or negotiation. It's really hard to negotiate a good deal for yourself if you're limiting yourself to one buyer. And that can often be the case when an owner is grooming someone. Let's suppose they're spending years grooming someone to take over. and suddenly that person decides they don't really want to take over, or they're not negotiating in good faith. So you want to expand, you want to be able to dip into the entire pool of buyers. Often sellers will say, well, I'm talking to this buyer. I want to see where discussions go with this buyer before I enter any new discussions. And we always advise people, no, you want to talk to as many as possible and efficiently. You can't, you need to start discussions at the high level and basically eliminate candidates as quickly as you can.
Mm-hmm. How many buyers would you say somebody should try and vet?
That depends. In some metropolitan areas, we'll vet 60 buyers on a particular practice. In some, in smaller towns, it's much more difficult to. You definitely see a big change in the quantity, just in terms of the size of the city. But it's great if you've got 5 or 6 serious candidates. That's ideal.
What's the market like for CPA firms, or does it vary a lot depending on firm size and type?
It does vary a lot. It varies by location. It varies by size. It varies by all sorts of different factors. Mix of work is an important one. So those are probably the main variables.
How long would you recommend sellers stay with the firm after a transition?
Well, this is a really interesting question. I think in terms of what most of our clients expect when they talk about this topic, most people sort of envision a much longer transition than we do. On a normal transaction, we recommend about 3 or 4 weeks where the seller is directly working with the buyer after closing. And most people are a little bit taken aback by that it's that short. But we find that transition is actually quite counterintuitive, that the long transition has some problems, and the short transition has quite a few benefits that people may not have considered. And some of those benefits are the buyer is just going to bond much more quickly with clients and with staff if they're taking over that front stage more rapidly.
What would be your one biggest piece of advice to people who are trying to sell their firms?
One biggest piece to selling? That's a great question. You want to try to remove the emotion from the deal. And you want to try to maximize the number of potential buyers. So that would probably be my biggest recommendation, is try to make it an unemotional experience.
What happens when the emotions get involved?
Well, there's always going to be some emotion involved, but I think people don't make good decisions when they're, when there's too much emotional involvement. Yeah. It's hard to let go. It's hard to let go for sellers. It's hard to, it's hard to just make sure that you're covering all your bases if you're, not objective about everything.
Now, if you're listening and you'd like to read more tips about how to sell your practice, you can check out Brandon's blog. It's at pogroupadvisors.com/blog. You can also check out some resources from our practice management section at aicpa.org/PCPS. This has been Courtney Vian for the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Thank you for listening.